Today's shir is Masechta Kedushin Daf Chav Zayin, and we will begin on Daf Chav Vav Amud Beis, three lines from the bottom Toshma. In our previous shir, the Gemara had begun discussing a question about, we had learned about Kinyan Agav, that one of the ways a Kinyan could be accomplished is by, if you buy Karka, Nechasim Sheesh L'Machrayis, that as we learned in the Mishnah, there are a number of ways such a transaction is considered halachically valid. And the Gemara discussed what would be the halacha if somebody bought such property and then he bought agav that metaltlin. So even though these might not have been methods, how normally we could do a kinyan on metaltlin, the halacha was that It's a valid kinyan because of kinyan agav. But the Gemara had asked the question, when we said that kinyan agav is acceptable, what does that mean? Does that mean that the metatlin that we're buying agav the karka have to be actually on the karka? Or even if they're not actually on the karka, as long as you want to buy them, that is adequate. And the Gemara had not yet come up with an answer. So says the Gemara Tashma, the Mishnah Masechta Maaseh Sheni, Perkei Mishnah Tes, discusses a Maaseh where Gamliel was a Kenim, Sheboim Besfina, they were traveling on a boat. And Rav Gamliel remembered that he had at home produce which was Tevel, which he had not taken off Trumas and Maasehs from. So he was concerned that people at home might come to eat from that produce. And what he wanted to do was take off Trumas and Maaseres, even though he was obviously quite far from that boat. And the question was, how could he accomplish that? So the Ritva right away points out that the only way we could even consider that this should be acceptable, the only way we could consider it that it should be acceptable is if you hold a breira. Because otherwise, if he's not there, it's obviously not acceptable. So Amar Gamliel Zakenim, Rav Gamliel said to the Zakenim, Isud, a tenth of the payrus that I have there, Sheni Osud Lamud, that I'm going to remove when I'm going to be coming home, should be my Sarishin. And every year of the Shemit, of the cycles, one has to give Maaserishin, and he said it should be given to Yeshua, Yeshua ben Levi, who was a Levi, u'mekaymoi, and the place where these produce is muskaloi should be rented to him. That's how he should be able to take ownership of this property. The Rishonim asked the obvious question, how did Rav Gamliel do this? How did Rav Gamliel ever come to a situation like this? Isn't there a halacha that a person should be careful not to leave tevel in his home? So how did he leave this? So the simple answer really is in the Gemara's story that we're learning now. Because the Gemara speaks about what is he going to do with the Maaser Rishon, as we just discussed, with the Maaser Oni that we're going to discuss in a moment? What about Truma? So the answer is that he obviously took off Truma. And Truma is the easiest to take off because Midaraisa, Chit Achas, Pateres is a Kri. One kernel is even enough. And therefore, since Chita Achas Pateres is a Kri, one kernel is enough, Rav Gamliel was able to rely on that for the Truma. And the Chazaka, that a Chaver doesn't give up something, that he doesn't leave something not taken off properly, is primarily reflecting the Isra of Truma. The reason why it primarily speaks to Truma is because Tevel, where Truma was removed, eating is a Chi of Misa. The other ones don't carry the same significance. Another question that's asked is that the halacha is when one takes off trumas and maisrus, he has to take off min hamukaf. That is, he has to take off from produce that's all together. So how could he have done so? He's on the boat and taking off for produce. So the Ritva and the Meiri both answer that the definition of min hamukaf, they say, is not that you have to be exactly where your produce is to take off. What min hamukaf, they explain, means that you have to, if you have to have both the fruit that you're going to be taking as designating as trumas and maestras and the other produce all together. But that's what has to be together. But you don't have to be where they are. So the Pnei Yeshua explains, once he designated that there's maestration here, which is going to be for Yeshua, even though he didn't actually yet give it to Rabbi Yeshua, he was on the boat, the halacha is that it's good enough that it should not be considered tevel anymore. Tosfos also asks, we know, the Gemara mentions it in another number of places, that because the Leviim, as we're going to learn actually later in our Masechta, did not come up to Eretz Yisrael together with Ezra, when Ezra came up to Eretz Yisrael by the Bayis Sheni, so Ezra punished them that they should not be allowed to, they don't get the Maaserishit anymore. It's either given to Kohanim or to Aniyim. So how did he give it to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who was a Levi? So Tosfos answers that Rabbi Yeshua was an Ani. And therefore, even though it was taken away from regular Leviim, it still can be given to a Levi who is an Ani. Another pshat is that the Meiri suggest was that the Knas that Ezra made was only for his generation. It did not continue for future generations. Another teretz that I saw is that those Rishonim that say Ezra did not completely remove it from the Leviim. What Ezra did was he took it from the Leviim and he said Kohanim could also get, Aniyim could also get, but that doesn't mean that the Leviim can't get at all. Visa Acher, and another 10% that I'm going to take off. As we know, when we speak about the Shemitah cycle, the first and the second, and the fourth and the fifth year, we give Truma and Maaserishin and Maasersheni. In the third and sixth year, we give Maaser Ani. So this was obviously a Maaser Ani year. So he says, I have to give Maaser Ani. The next 10% that I'm going to take off, I'm giving to Akiva ben Yosef, in order that Akiva ben Yosef, who was the Gabe stocker, so he should take ownership of it, and I'm giving him ownership of that property. So Tosfos points out, if we just said that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was an Ani, and that's why he was entitled to Maaserishin, even if Leviim are no longer entitled to Maaserishin, so why didn't he give the Maaser Ani also to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? So there are two terutzim that are given in the Rishonim. One terutz that they say is that this halacha, that there are different categories of what is considered an Ani as far as Maaserishin is concerned, and what is considered an Ani as far as Maaserishin is concerned. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was enough of an Ani. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was enough of an Ani that he should receive Maaserishin, but he wasn't that much of an Ani that he should be able to get Maaser Ani. Another pshat that the Rishonim suggest, this is in general a halacha in Hilchos Tzedakah, is that when we're giving tzedakah, we want to distribute the tzedakah to as many people as possible. And therefore, since Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, since Rabbi Kiva was the Gabbai tzedakah, he wouldn't give just the Maaser Ani to one individual. He would distribute it to many individuals. And since it was being distributed to many individuals, that was preferable. It's also interesting that the Sefer Pri Tzadik It's interesting that the pre-tzaddik speaks about a knee about Rabbi Kiva ben Yosef that the Gemara is saying was the Gabbai Tzedakah. And the Gemara, when it speaks about Rabbi Kiva ben Yosef, calls him by his father's name. Why does he call him Akiva ben Yosef? We don't find that Rabbi Shua was called by his father's name. So the pre-tzaddik says that the reason Rabbi Kiva was called Akiva ben Yosef because Rabbi Kiva was a descendant of Yosef HaTzaddik. And we know, as the Pasuk says, the Yosef who are Mashbir. Yosef was the brother who supported all the other brothers when they were in Mitzrayim. So this attitude that Rabbi Kiva took care of other aniyim, he got because he was ben Yosef. The Sefer Margolius Hayam points out, we know that in the Agod it says, Masa Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shuva, Rabbi Lezer ben Azari, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tarfin, Shoyim Mesubim b'nei Barak, Vayim Mesapim b'tzis Mitzrayim kol ois ha-layla, Ad Shabo Talmideim, V'am Lam Higi, Rabbi Senu Higi Zman, Kriyishma Shal Shachris. And the question is that the Gemara in Masech the Sukkot, Daf Chof Aleph, Amin Aleph speaks about Rabbi Lezer and says, the Rabbi Lezer used to say, Meshabeich ani es atzlonim, I actually praise those people. Atzlonim technically means people who are lazy. Why does he praise those that are lazy? Because that they stay home for yontif. Einem yoytzim v'teim regel. So we see Rabbi Lezer's opinion was that one ought to stay home for yontif, and Rabbi Lezer lived in Lud. So how did Rabbi Lezer find himself in B'nai Barak? So he explains that the year that they were in B'nai Barak was the year after this episode. And because it was the year after this episode, that's why Rabbi Gamliel, that's why they arrived home on Erev Pesach. And B'nai Barak, he explains, was near the port, near Yafo. And that's why they spent that year Pesach in B'nai Barak. So the question then is, so if all of these Tanoim were together, and that's how they ended up spending Pesach together in B'nai Barak, why is Rav Gamliel, who clearly was amongst with them, why didn't he spend B'nai Barak? Why doesn't it say in that Gada that he spent Pesach together with them as well? So says the Margolius Hayam, because Rav Gamliel wanted, and that's what the Haggadah says, that his Talmidim, the Tanoim, should be able to sit by the Seder with Haseva. And since he wanted they should sit by Haseva, the halacha is that you can't sit by Haseva in the place of your Rebbe. Rav Gamliel was the Rebbe of all of these Talmidim. And since he was the Rebbe of all these Tanoim, he separated himself from them, Shayim Subim, that they should be able to sit by Seva by the Seder. But says the Gemara, as far as what we're learning, Shema Mina, being in Tziburim Ba. Here, presumably, it was a Kinyan Agav, and still, Rabbi Gamliel went out of the way to say that the place should be rented to them, so it should be considered a valid Kinyan Agav. Since the Gemara, Shani Hasam, Rabbi Gamliel gave them ownership of the place, Kikeich Delayla Trindhunu. In order, he wanted that they should not have to take the Meiser or whatever they was giving to them, take it away immediately. So he says, the place that they're on is yours, and you have no pressure to remove it quickly. Says the Gemara. So the Gemara is still with its original question. When we have a Kinyan Agav, do the Metatlin have to be on that property or not? Toshma Adamar Rav Yitzchak Amarav, Shnei Shtar Hussein. There are two different types of documents that are written on a piece, on a property. Zuchu B'shtar Sadezul Aploni. If somebody says to Adam, take ownership on this piece of property for on behalf of this individual, the kisvelo is a shtar, and then write a shtar to be a proof that this actually happened, choyze b'shtar, he could retreat from what he said that they should write a shtar, and therefore they won't write it, v'ene choyze b'sada. But the actual kinyan, he can't back off. So Tosfos explains that we're speaking here Barishtar Matana. By Mishtar Matana, that's where he could back off. But not by Shtar Kinyan. The Rajbo and the Ramban explain that any type of Shtar, the deal, the transaction, because of the concept of Zochel and Shadim Mishlab Yifonav, is considered a full-fledged transaction, but you can't back out. I'm not sure Tichtel is a Shtar, but let's say when he made this condition, he said that this condition should be connected, that you will write a Shtar. Then, if he doesn't want that Shtar should be written, Bein B'Star, Bein B'Sada, he could back out of the Shtar, or he could back out of the Sada, or back out of the transaction. The reason he could back out is because the transaction hasn't taken place. And since the transaction hasn't taken place, he could still back out. There are three types of situations. Trei, Tua, Hadamarn, that we just mentioned. Idach, there's one more case. If the seller wrote to the buyer as a shtar, if the seller wrote the shtar to the buyer before the transaction took place, kaisa sheninu, as actually the halacha is, kaisa shtar lemoicher, we could write the shtar on behalf of the seller, api shein lekeich imai, even though he isn't there yet. As soon as there was a kinyan on the karka, the shtar becomes his, wherever it is. So of course the Rishonim ask, how could this be possible? How could this have been acceptable? You can't date a shtar. It's a predated shtar. It turns out that this shtar would have a date before the actual transaction took place. So how could you have a predated shtar is disqualified? So Rashi says that there was actually a kinyan chalipin that took place, and that took place immediately. And therefore, since that kinyan chalipin took place immediately, this is not considered a predated shtar. Another answer Rashi suggests is that the edim, by signing the shtar, are affecting a transaction on behalf of the buyer, and therefore the fact that it's not considered predated. The Ramban and the Rajba also asked this question, and they say that we're talking here about a shtar raya and not a shtar kinyan. When is there a halacha that you can't predate a shtar? That's only by a shtar kinyan, not by a shtar raya. Ritva says that the way this transaction was structured is that the date was the date that the shtar was written. That's the date in the shtar. And the stipulation of the transaction was that whenever the actual kinyan takes place, it should be effective retroactively from the date of the shtar. But from here we see, Shema Minola Bina Tzibura, but the shtar becomes valid once the kinyan on the property took place. But the shtar wasn't on the property. Isn't this clearly an indication that kinyan agav does not require it should be there? It says, Dumar Shani shtar, a shtar is not considered kinyan agav. Dafsir the arahu, the shtar is no more than like a rope with which you pull an animal. The shtar is not what makes the kinyan. The shtar is just shtar raya. And therefore, the regular halacha of kinyan agav would not be relevant. Ask the Gemara halach tani. But ask the Gemara, we learned regarding this braisa, zui sheninu nechosim, that this was an example. Zui sheninu, that this is exactly an example of nechosim she'en l'machrayis, that nechosim she'esh l'machrayis, the kesef, b'shtara b'chazaka. So clearly, this Bryce is teaching us, the Rechibar Avon is teaching us that this is an example of Kinyan Agav, and not because it's a special point of Afsira the Arahu. So clearly from here we have a Raya, Shmamino Labin and Tziburim, that in order for Kinyan Agav to be effective, the Metatlin need not be on the Karka. Shmamino, we have a very compelling proof. And that's the halacha. The halacha is that in order for a kinyan agav to be effective, it's not necessary for the metatlon to be on the karka. Based on this, somebody going back to what we discussed on daf chav vav mabeis says the Imri Binyamin, if somebody wants to purchase an elephant, we learned he has to take possession of the land beneath the animal. Now, according to the Itter, who says the Kinyan Agav could be effective, so he says you could rent any piece of property from the seller, and Agav, the renting of the piece of property, because the Itter's opinion is that to say Kinyan Agav, you don't have to buy the property, you could rent the property. So one of the ways to be able to purchase to do the Kinyan on the elephant would be to rent a piece of property and agav that, take the animal. However, says the Miri Binyamin, in the name of the Maret, that he differentiates between purchasing property and renting property. He says, even though the Gemara just said that you don't have to have the metatlin on the actual property to have a kinyan agav, that's only when you're purchasing the property. But when you're renting the property, since your ownership of the property obviously is a much more limited, was a much more limited type of situation, so therefore, in that case, you're going to have tzibur metaychi. Ibailahu. Mi be'inan, do we need that when we're effecting a kinyan agav, that the seller should explicitly say that he's doing kinyan agav? Or is it not necessarily to speak it out? And Rashi explains that the Gemara's question is, like we just learned, do you have to explicitly say that you mean to do a kinyan agav or you don't? So said the Ratva, Ran and Ritva, that Rashi seems to be saying that in the Gemara's question is that if you say that you have to say agav, not only do you have to say the word agav, not only do you have to say it, but you have to specifically use the word agav. If you hold, you have to say it. Any other word besides agav would not do. Other Rishonim disagree. And they say that even if we're going to hold that you have to speak it out, you don't have to use the word agav. As long as you're making it clear that that's good enough, that you're trying to affect this type of a kinyan, that would be enough. And the Stipler explains this machlokes. He says this machlokes is really connected to how does agav work. If we say that agav is a new type of a kinyan, and that if I'm buying karka, I'm buying the chosum sheish lamachrayis, then the chosum she'en lamachrayis come along automatically, and there's really no special kinyan needed on the metatlin. So then, Rashi says, the only way it would be effective is if you clearly say out the word agav. But if you say that a kinyan agav doesn't mean that you have to, that there's a kinyan, it doesn't mean that you have to say agav. But what it means is agav means that the karka, the kinyan on the karka is the same kinyan with, the kinyan with the karka is the same kinyan as on the metatlin. So then it's, as long as you're making it clear that whatever kinyan I'm doing on the karka should work on the metatlin, even though I didn't use the word agav, it would be sufficient. Toshma, says the Gemara, we've learned all of these mishnayos and brises in our shurim that spoke about agav, v'loiktani, and never did we learn that he has to say the word agav. Says the Gemara, l'tameich, in all these brises that we learned, mishnayos that we learned, kani miktani, do we say that they said, let's do a transaction. But it's obvious that you have to say that when you're doing a transaction, the intent is to do a transaction. Ela ada amakni. You have to say it. If you don't say it, It's obviously meaningless. Hachnami, it could, and even though the Brises and the Mishnayos didn't say it, it's obvious. Here too, Adama Agav, says the Gemara Vehilchso, and the Gemara therefore says, Tziburim Loibinen, you don't need to have the Metatlin on the property to make it a valid Kinyan Agav. However, Agav, to say out the word Agav, and the Kinyan to specifically indicate that you're trying to make a Kinyan, Binan unnecessary. Iboilhu, ask the Gemara, Sada b'mecher, if somebody is selling the field, Metatlin b'matana, but the Metatlin that are part of his ranks, a part of this transaction, are be given as a gift. Mahu, can we have, could that be a valid Kinyan Agav? Because they're not really similar. One is a sale and one is a gift. And as I saw the Rishonim explain, since Kinyan Agav is a weak type of Kinyan, we can't just apply it all over. Toshma, says the Gemara, we go back to the episode that we began our Shiva today. Isa Shani Osalamud, the 10% of Maisarishin, I'm going to give to Yeshua Mekuma Muskaloi. So we have that the Metatlin were being given as a gift. The property was being rented, and yet they could be even so they weren't both being transferred in the same manner, and still it was considered a valid Kinyan Shmamina. Ibailhu, Sadal Echod, if the way we want to accomplish a Kinyan Agav is by giving the field to one individual, Matatlan L'Acher, and the Matatlan to somebody else, Mahu. Can that also be a valid Agav, even though two different people are the recipients here? Toshma, Isa Shani Yosu Lomad, Nosan Akiva Ben Yosef, Kadesh Yisko Boilaniyim. Akiva Ben Yosef, as we explained earlier, was the Gabet Stoka. So he wasn't taking ownership of this Maestro Oni for himself. He was just taking ownership of it on behalf of the Niyim. Umakayma Muskaloi, but the place on which the Maestro Oni was situated was being rented to Rabbi Kiva. So we see they don't have to be the same place. Says the Gemara, my Musker, it wasn't rented to him. Says the Gemara, Muskala Maestro, was rented to the Maestro. So it means it's the same recipients of the property and of the Maiser. Vibay Seima, Gemara gives another teretz, Shani Rabbi Kiva, the Yad HaNiyim Hu. Since Rabbi Kiva was the Gabei Tzedaka, he is considered an extension of the Aniyim. And since he's considered the extension of the Aniyim, whatever is the Halacha, so Rabbi Kiva and the Aniyim are really one and the same. There's an interesting discussion in the Rishonim. When the Gemara is saying this svara, does it only mean regarding a gabbai tzedaka? What will be the halacha regarding an apotropis? The Gemara often speaks about an apotropis. What will be the halacha? Amar Rava lo yishanu. The Gemara continues teaching us. Rava teaches us in Hilchas Agav el shenosan demei kulan. He only if he paid up in full would a kinyan agav be effective. Avol lo yinosan demei kulan. If he didn't pay up in full, Loi Kana, it would not be effective Kinyan. El Kenegim Moisov, he would only take ownership as much towards a much prorated to as much as he paid. And again, here too, the Rajba and the Ritva say that since Kinyan Agav is a weak Kinyan, that's why Rav is saying that the Alochi is that here you have to pay up for the amount that you're going to, in order for the Kinyan Agav to be valid, that it'll be only towards that amount. But the Rajba points out that even according to Rava, that you have to pay in order for the Kinyan Agav to be valid, that's only if it wasn't clearly spoken out. But if it was clearly spoken out that it is your intention that you want to do a Kinyan Agav, so then even if you didn't pay according to the amount that you owe, it would be valid. And the explanation, I think, is that because Kinyan, as we always speak about in our Shurim, represent a Gemira Stas. So if Kinyan represents a Gemira Stas, the Gemira Stas is there if you speak it out, and therefore it's a valid kinyan even if you didn't pay. Tani kavosei the Rava, and says the Gemara, the Braisa indicates that Rava is correct, because the Braisa says, Yofa koyach hakesef mikoyach hashtar, and koyach hashtar mikoyach hakesef. In a way, kinyan kesef is stronger than kinyan shtar, and in some ways, kinyan shtar is stronger than kinyan kesef. And the Gemara and the Braisa explains itself. Yocha koyach hakesef, shah kesef, poidim by kadeshus or meisa sheni, we could redeem hegdish or meisa sheni with kesef. Mashen came b'shtar, they cannot be bought with shtar. For yofa koyach shtar, shah shtar moitzi bas Yisrael, we know that a shtar represents a get. A get is could terminate a marriage. Mashen came b'kesef, kesef cannot be used to terminate a marriage. Continues the Braisa, the yofa koyach shneam b'koyach chazaka. Kesef and shtar have a strength over kinyan chazaka. Koyach chazaka in a way stronger than the koyach shneam. Yofa koyach shneam shneam koyach be'evad ivri. Kesef and shtar are legitimate ways of taking ownership of an evad ivri. Mashen kein b'chazaka. Chazaka can work for an evad kanani, not for an evad ivri. The yofa koyach chazaka. If somebody sold somebody 10 properties in 10 different countries, if you take ownership of one of those properties, they all become your property. The Medvar Amurim says the Braisa, when is that effective? That if you took ownership of one, then all of them will become yours. And the Rishonim point out that that's only if the 10 properties, as the Gemara just indicated, are in 10 different places. But if the 10 properties are near each other, then this halacha would not be the case. That's when Shenosan Lai Demei Kulan, when he paid for all the properties. Avaloi Nosan Lai Demei Kulan, if he did not pay off for all the properties, Loi Kana El Kenegit Me'osav, that you only have as much as you paid for. So we see here too a precedent to what Rava said, that if you take 10 properties, that if you buy it with this type of kinyan, you have to pay. So the Chedushei Rim asks, if the halacha is that you could take ownership in 10 properties by just taking ownership in one of them, the Rashi says, the Medrash says, that when Yaakov Avinu came to Beis El, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the entire Etz Yisrael Kavayachal and put it under him. Like that, he took ownership of Etz Yisrael. But according to what we just learned in the Gemara, that isn't necessary. So Chedush Yerim explains that here we're trying to, by Yaakov Avinu sleeping in that area, what he accomplished was that it should get a level of Kedusha. The level of Kedusha cannot be achieved unless he's actually on it. If he's not actually on it, that level of Kedusha that we're trying to achieve is not going to happen. Mesaile Shmuel says the Gemara that we're learning here that if you took ownership of one property, that you're buying 10 properties, you take ownership of one, it works for all of them. Mesaile Shmuel. If somebody sold somebody else 10 properties in 10 different places, as soon as you take ownership of one of them, kones kulam. Omer of Achabrei Deravika Teda, that a proof that this is a valid way of effecting a transaction. If somebody gave somebody 10 animals that are all tied together, Vomle Kni, and he tells him, take ownership of all of these animals, the Miloy Kani doesn't become owner of all the animals, even though each one is separate. So they said to Rav Acha, to Rei Dervika, your proof is a weak proof. Midami. Hasam iguda biyadai. All of the animals are tied together. And therefore, it's considered as if he did a kinyan, and by taking ownership of picking up the rope, it's like you took ownership of all of them. Hacha ain't a god biyadai. There's nothing that connects those 10 pieces of property, and therefore the two situations are different. Ikadamri, Amar Vachabrei Dervika, Teida Deloikani. I don't agree with Shmuel. Because what would be the halacha? He says, Ilam Masalai Esa Behemus, if he gave him 10 animals, or somebody purchased 10 animals that are Ba'afsar Acha, that are all connected, Vamle Kni, and he said, buy all of them, Mikani, would he buy them? No, you have to do a separate kinyan on every animal. And therefore, here too, just doing a kinyan on one piece of property, it's inadequate to take ownership of all 10 pieces of property, says the Gemara Midami. Hasam, when you're taking ownership of 10 animals, each animal, gufa mechalakim, is a separate animal. And since each animal is a separate animal, you have to do a separate kinyan on each animal. Hacha, sada da'aruchadhu. The halacha is that the entire world is really all connected. And since the entire world is all connected, taking ownership of one piece of property is adequate. So we learned in the Mishnah, the halacha of Gilgal Shvua, that the halacha of Zoik can have a tantamas in the chosim. As we learned in the Mishnah, Ein Nishbon al Kakos, the halacha is we can't require, if there are two litigants over a piece of property, Ein Nishbon al Kakos, one litigant cannot make the other party swear when the dentire is over property. But we learned a new din in the Mishnah. The din that we learned in the Mishnah is the din of Gilgal Shvua. Gilgal Shvua teaches us, that we could, once we're making a Shvua that the Torah does mandate, that Shvua will also be effective, even will require you to make a Shvua, even on something that normally a Shvua would not be doable. So, therefore, since we're making a Shvua Metatlin, it will also tell us to make the Shvua on the Karka. So says the Gemara, Amr Ula, Menayin LeGilga Shvua Menatayr, what is the precedent for this? Shenema. The Torah speaks about in the Parsha Soita, after the Kohen Gadol makes a swear that she did not have an adulterous relationship, the Torah says, V'amre Isha, she should say, Amen, Amen. What does that mean? The Tanan. And the Mishnah Masechta Soita Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis teaches us, Amahi Ameris Amen Amen. What does she say? Amen Amen. Amen Ala Ala. One, she's saying Amen that the Kohen made a swear that if she is guilty, she will suffer all of the punishments that the Torah says. Amen Ala Shvua. She says Amen on the Shvua that she didn't have this relationship. Amen Mizeh. Amen from that she didn't have relationship with this man that the husband accused of having a relationship with. Amen, mishach from another man. Amen, shleitis, tisi, arusa, nesua. And it's all included that she's making a shvua that she did not do anything wrong while she was an arusa, or while she was in a nesua, or while she was a yishmeres yavam, or kenusa after the yavam married her. That's what the Mishnah in Masechta Soita taught us. So it says the Gemara, Hai Arusa Echidami. The Braisa speaks about an Arusa. What does that mean? Ilaim the Kanalak She Arusa. If we're going to say that the husband did the kinui of warning her not to be alone with this man while she was an Arusa, the Kamashkala, and there were Edom that she was alone with that man. And since there were Edom that she was alone with that man, that's why he does the Saita procedure, She Arusa, while she's still only in Arusa. Ask the Gemara, Vatnan, didn't we learn him Sechta Saita, Davchof Gimelon Abeis, Arusa Vishmeris Yavam, Loishoisis, the procedure is not done to them, but if they violated Kinu and Stira, Loinotlus Ksuba, they lose their Ksuba. My Tama, why is she not a candidate to drink the Mayim Amarim? Because says the Gemara, the Pasuk, when it speaks about the parish of a soita, says, Tachas Ishech Merachmona, under your full-fledged husband, and she, Velek, is not a full-fledged husband. Ella, what must be the case? The Kanalaki Sherusa, Kinu was done while she was in Arusa, Venistera Kisherusa, and Stira was done where she was in Arusa, the Kamashkalaki Shinasua, but he's only giving her to drink the water after there was Nasuan. Ask the Gemara, but mimatkalemayim, would the bayim hamaorim work under such circumstances? Does the Torah not say v'niko ishmi oven amrachmana bezman she ishmenukim oven? Only if the husband is innocent, That's when Hamayim Baitkim Sishtoi. That's when the water will work on the wife. However, Eina Ish Menukim Oven, if the husband is not innocent, Eina Mayim Baitkim Sishtoi, they will not be effective on the wife. And here, when he had relations, he did Nisuin, when she's a Soita, he's not supposed to have relations with him, with her, after she became a Soita. So by him having relations with her after she became a Soita, he did an Aveira, and the water won't work then. Ella, what it means is Aidei Gilgal. What happened was that the entire procedure happened here after she was a Nesua. And what the Torah is teaching us is that the Shvua that he's making at this time will be effective even for times that normally she can't become a Soita. Why? Because of the concept of Gilgal Shvua. A Gilgal Shvua teaches us that you can do two things at the same time. Reb Cheskel Levenstein Zatzal, in a Sefer Or Yecheskel, has a very strong explanation about Eina Ush Menukim Oven, Eina Mayim Boitkin is Ashtoi. He says, if we think about the entire parsha of the parsha of Soita, it teaches us a tremendous lesson in Amunah. And it teaches us what an Aveira represents. He says, think about it. And he says, the Ramban actually says this. If there's an individual, a woman, who had this adulterous relationship, what happens to her? The Torah tells us that she will drink the Mayim HaMa'arim, and the Mayim HaMa'arim will cause her a terrible death. And on the other hand, if she is innocent, as the Torah says, she will have bracha. The Gemara says, Yoladus Betzar. Till now, she had children difficulty, not Telet Shloi Betzar. If till now she didn't have children, now she will have children. So the May Soita was something that showed us tremendous amunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu to see what a mitzvah means, what an Aveira means. And he says that served as a lesson for everything that for our entire experience. But says Reb Cheskel Levenstein, that world changed. We don't have any more a world of a Soita. Why don't we have any more the world of a Soita? Because only in a world where people live with a Muna, that's a world where we can have a world where we see immediately the punishment for an Aveira, we see immediately the schar for a mitzvah. But we don't live in a world like that, then we don't deserve to see that immediately. So that's what he says is pshat. Bezman she'ish menukim oven. When we live in a world where people aren't bali aveira, hamayim baitkanai soy, that's a world where the may soit the world. But as man she'ain ish menukim oven, if we live in a world where people aren't innocent, then we don't deserve to live in a world, the mayim baitkanai soy, we don't deserve to live in a world where our actions and the repercussions of our actions are immediately evident.